Whenever I teach scripture, I emphasize that the details of the biblical text are not only important, but crucial. When I say details, I mean all the details. Every word, every syntactical unit, every paragraph, every sentence, every phrase is, in one way or another, decisive in determining how the text should be read.
The Bible is full of stories that we all know and love. But how well do we know them? The answer might surprise you. The Bible you thought you knew is going to dive deep into the exquisite details of the biblical stories that make them fascinating and transforming.
Eventually, this week's podcast is going to be my initial podcast for listeners who come late in the process. But I'm going to do it now in sequence. Basically, it's my rationale for why you should listen to the Bible you thought you knew. The title of this podcast is, Why Should You Listen to the Podcast, The Bible You Thought You Knew? The Devil is in the Details. I promise you I am quite aware that there are thousands of podcasts available these days. Candidly, I did not know how many as recently as about 11 months ago. But when I decided to do a weekly podcast, the sheer number that were out there certainly did not escape my attention. At first, I was a little intimidated. Among the countless offerings there are, as you might imagine, quite a few deal with the Christian Bible. With so many choices available, why would anyone want to listen to me? Now, I have zero interest in denigrating any other podcasts. Instead, I want to provide a rationale for listening regularly to the Bible you thought you knew. If credentials are important to you, I can assure you that I have the appropriate alphabet qualifications after my name, BA, MDiv, MA, PhD. If you want to know chapter and verse about those degrees, I invite you to check out my website, faspina.com, faspina.com. While you are there, you will discover that I was professor of Old Testament for 46 years at Seattle Pacific University. Still, though credentials are perhaps requisite, there are more compelling reasons to listen to the Bible you thought you knew. After all, I'm not the only educated podcaster. My title, The Bible You Thought You Knew, is arguably the best indicator of what distinguishes my podcast from others. Let me explain. When I was a professor, my university and seminary students largely came from church backgrounds which held that the Bible was absolutely vital to Christian life. These churches typically did their best to foster biblical literacy. They did this with sermons, Sunday school, adult education, Bible study groups, urging regular reading of Scripture, and the like. As a result, when students from such churches enrolled in my classes, they were confident that they already knew the Bible quite well. They might not have been aware of scholarly theories, arcane interpretive issues, or the finer points that scholars debated based on their knowing Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. But when it came to the actual text in their favorite English Bibles, my students believed that they could more than hold their own. After all, their churches had steeped them in Scripture, or so they thought. Now, it is no secret why Christians pay attention to Scripture. The stories are foundational to their faith. Those stories are revelatory in that they disclose what God did in Israel and Jesus the Christ to reconcile, redeem, and restore the whole created order. Christians attend to the Bible to discern God's will. Sometimes they are challenged by biblical material or comforted by it. Christian scripture is simultaneously accessible to all who read with an open mind and willing heart, but profound enough that the task of interpretation is never ending. In any case, few would argue that cultivating robust Christian faith does not require a degree of biblical literacy. Because of this, students signed up for my classes with great expectations. As noted, they were convinced that they already were familiar with the Bible. Studying at the university or seminary level would make them even more adept at comprehending what the Bible had to say about multiple topics. My students could hardly wait to demonstrate their prowess with Scripture. Introduction may have been part of the course title, but those who enrolled in my classes thought they were well beyond that point. The Bible did not need to be introduced to them. They already knew it quite well, thank you. Thus, they came to class thinking that the course would enhance their considerable biblical knowledge, hone their interpretive skills, and make them even more competent at appropriating Scripture's profound teaching. I am not exaggerating in the least. This was the default mindset of most of my students during my career. Alas, typically by the end of the first week of the term, these eager students were badly shaken, even disillusioned. Why was this? What happened? How did their excitement over taking a terrific class devolve into a veritable nightmare? How could any course with Bible in the title end up being not merely disappointing, but threatening? No one thought my courses were boring. Had that been the case, no controversy would have ensued. Instead, my students complained, sometimes bitterly, that my class was not only more demanding than they anticipated, but enormously frustrating as well. Once again, I am not exaggerating. Given this grim reality, how did my students respond? Well, as you might guess, first, they blamed me. Why is the professor floating ideas I've never heard before? How can I ever understand this specialized language of biblical scholarship? Why did I learn none of this in Sunday school? I never heard my pastor, my youth leader, or my parents say anything remotely close to what I am hearing in this class. In a single week, it is as though I have been plopped down in a foreign country which speaks a language that is gibberish to me. I want my tuition refunded. To be fair, I accept some of the blame for those reactions. My students had never been exposed to the ideas I was presenting. And like any other academic discipline, biblical scholarship has its own technical vocabulary or jargon. Plus, I had warned my students at the outset that a university or seminary course on Scripture is more, much more, than Sunday school on steroids. It took a little time for that warning to register. But what I said from the lectern only partially explained my students' extreme discomfort. There was something much more basic that was engendering such a negative reaction. After all, what a professor said in class could be ultimately dismissed. The professor said one thing, my pastor said the opposite. I believe my pastor. The professor seems critical of a theological position that my youth leader espouses. I believe my youth leader, who is much cooler than my professor anyway. The professor is promoting ideas that I absolutely know would freak out my parents. I am not prepared to think my parents were that wrong on such an important issue as my faith. In short, if necessary, a student will have little trouble rejecting what a professor professes. After all, professors are occasionally eccentric, famously entertain radically new ideas, or delight in being a devil's advocate. Besides, professors are hardly infallible. There is a reason why there are jokes about mad professors. It was the luck of the draw that I find myself in a course taught by a professor who seems to enjoy pulling the rug out from under students. But those complaints only went so far. As it turns out, regardless of the amount of criticism I elicited or even deserved, what I had to say was not ultimately the true source of my students' disaffection. Instead, it was the biblical text itself. It was one thing to reject the strange viewpoints that a given professor promoted. It was quite another when the biblical text became the problem. If I am right about this, the question looms. What precisely was it about the Bible that threw my students for such a loop? I think there are primarily two answers to this question. One had to do with my insistence on introducing the whole Bible. Most people, and this includes most churches, do not take all the biblical material seriously. Rather, the Bible is approached in a piecemeal fashion. Quite simply, some parts of Scripture are considered more important than others. Biblical scholars refer to this phenomenon as opting for a canon within the canon. Do not be put off by the word canon, which is spelled C-A-N-O-N. Canon is simply the technical term for writings that a community of faith believes are decisive and authoritative for its faith and life. For example, the Holy Quran is the canon for Muslims. The Hebrew Bible, or Jewish scripture, which is sometimes abbreviated with the acronym Tanakh, as designating the law, prophets, and writings, is Judaism's canon. Similarly, the Old and New Testament is the canon for the Christian church. However, when the scriptures are approached from the perspective of a canon within the canon, though all scripture may be formally acknowledged, only certain sections are practically used for theological reflection or ethical formation. The lay term for this is cherry picking. To illustrate, let's try this thought experiment. Which is more familiar to you, the Gospel of John or the books of Nahum, Zechariah, or Ezekiel? Would you be more confident explaining the content of the Gospel of Mark or 2 Kings? Does your pastor preach often on the Gospels or the Epistles, but rarely on Leviticus or 1 Chronicles? For typical Christians, the answers to these questions are scarcely mysterious. You get my point. Though Christians make lofty, even extravagant claims about Christian scripture, it is inspired, authoritative, infallible, and the like, those claims are not translated into taking all of scripture into account. Please understand, I am not arguing that some parts of scripture are not more important than others. That would be silly. Paul's letter to the Romans is crucial in a way that the letter of Jude is not. Nahum is not to be ignored, but is simply not on a par with Isaiah. Notwithstanding, there is a sense in which all of Scripture plays a role. There is a sense in which nothing in Scripture is irrelevant. Here is why. Scripture was written by different people, at different places, to different audiences, at different times, and for different reasons. Over the centuries, these written materials were gathered, added to, subtracted from, edited, combined, and placed finally in the order we now have. All of this happened in the context of a community or even communities of faith. Given this process, Scripture in its final form addresses many issues from a variety of vantage points. It is imperative to pay attention to these perspectives as the community determines what to believe and how to act. A few examples might help to underscore my contention. The little prophetic book Nahum vilifies Assyrians. This is for good reason, in that the Assyrians destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel in the 8th century. But there is a counter to Nahum in the book of Jonah. That book credits the entire population of Nineveh, Assyria's capital city, for acknowledging Israel's God and repenting when Jonah, an Israelite prophet, preached to them. Even Assyrian cows repented. Point and counterpoint. The book of Leviticus accents the centrality of sacrifice in Israelite worship. Yet other texts, Amos, Jeremiah, Psalm 51, for instance, are critical of how often Israel abused the sacrificial system. Point and counterpoint. The book of Proverbs promises that choosing to live wisely will virtually ensure long life, prosperity, and general well-being. But two other wisdom books, Job and Ecclesiastes, lament that living wisely is no guarantee of health, wealth, long life, or avoiding disaster. Point and counterpoint. Such points and their counterpoints are found throughout the scriptural witness. Most of my students realized for the first time in their lives that this was a common feature of Christian scripture. To be sure, there is a coherence to scripture when viewed holistically, but that is not the same as insisting that the Bible only offers one perspective on a particular issue. The Bible is multivalent and highly nuanced, meaning that it offers a variety of outlooks on all the contingencies, complexities, and even ambiguities of human life. Facing this reality was a bitter pill to swallow for many of my students. At first, it sent them reeling. Now we come to the second answer about how it was that Scripture became problematic for my students who thought they knew the Bible from cover to cover. Whenever I teach Scripture, I emphasize that the details of the biblical text are not only important, but crucial. When I say details, I mean all the details. Every word, every syntactical unit, every paragraph, every sentence, every phrase is, in one way or another, decisive in determining how the text should be read. An analogy or so might help. When one listens to music, regardless of genre, every single note counts. There is no such thing as too few or too many notes. The composer will determine the number of notes. If one wants to hear the music, one must hear all the notes. Another analogy is art. If one is gazing at a painting, every brushstroke, every use of color, every shading, every color that has been mixed with another, how bright or dull the color is, even the painting's texture, is essential to the finished product. Nothing is extraneous, nothing is incidental, and nothing can be left out in considering how the picture as a totality is viewed. One more example. When one watches a movie, one sees on the screen not the totality of everything the cameras filmed during production. Instead, one sees the finished product that is basically the collaboration of director and editor. This means that every scene, every line of dialogue, every fade in or fade out, every close up or panoramic view, every piece of action, every voiceover, regardless of how incidental anything seems, has been purposefully chosen. That does not mean that on occasion an ad lib makes it into the movie, or an actor does not go against direction from time to time in a way that improves the film, or a director or editor decides on a particular scene diametrically different from a scene that had originally been shot. It does mean, however, that what you see on the screen, once the movie has been released, is precisely what the director and editor agreed to present. Scripture is like these examples. Because the Bible comes to us in literary form, it has all the hallmarks of literature. The Bible has been exquisitely authored, brilliantly edited, replete with allusions to different parts of Scripture, full of wordplay, metaphor, and symbolism. The biblical material has, over the centuries, been reworked countless times to become the final form that we now have. As such, it is highly nuanced, wondrously textured, delightfully tantalizing, at times purposefully ambiguous, often intriguing, terribly blunt, graphic in the extreme, brutally honest, seldom boring, given to high drama, unexpectedly humorous, penetratingly discomforting, rhetorically apt, poetically oriented, and surprisingly captivating. Summarizing this literary approach, there are three things to keep in mind. One, the final present form of the text is the object of study. Two, this text has integrity regardless of the prior process of composition or the historical reality alleged to be behind the text. Three, analyzing the features of this text will reveal how the text is to be read. What this means, above all, is that the text needs to be observed in every detail. To accomplish that task with my students, I would assign them to note down their observations on every text I had them read. This flummoxed them initially. If I asked them to produce 50 observations on Genesis 1 through 11, for example, they griped that that was too many observations for a short amount of text. I responded that I probably could come up with 50 observations on Genesis 1, if not on the first verse of Genesis 1. There is no end of observations. Every time one goes to a text and reads intently, something new will be seen. Think, for example, of how many times you watch a favorite movie and see something that you had previously missed in the countless times you watched before. Observing the text was not simply busy work, despite my students' constant resistance to this assignment. Rather, the details make all the difference in the world. The details provide a text's nuances, texture, emphasis, focus, orientation, color, and so on. In a word, the devil is in the details. If that is offensive to you since we are talking about the Bible, then revise the saying to, the angel is in the details. Regardless, when the Bible is read and interpreted by skimming, summarizing, by glossing over the details, by considering them incidental or inconsequential, interpretation will be correspondingly distorted, off the mark, and even deceptively wrong. Details, details, details. They are there for a reason. This is why the podcast, The Bible You Thought You Knew, will accent two unique features involved in biblical interpretation. One, I will attend to the full range of biblical materials, even those parts that are obscure, seemingly irrelevant, or contain abhorrent content. Two, I will bring into the discussion the very details that most people have never even noticed when they read the text, no matter how many times they read it. Of course, the proof is in the pudding. I'm inviting you to have a taste when you listen to The Bible you thought you knew.
I want to thank you so very much for listening to The Bible You Thought You Knew. I have a question for you. Do you have a question or topic that you'd like me to cover on the podcast? If so, all you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do two simple things. One, leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. Two, in that review, ask anything you want related to the Bible. That's all you have to do. Then, listen in to hear your question answered on a future episode. Join us next time on The Bible You Thought You Knew when we discuss Jesus' personal Bible. God bless.